We are joined in our studios here in Hong Kong by Ruchir Desai, Fund Manager, Asia Frontier Capital. Ruchir, thanks for coming into the studios with us. So we have the markets that are quite buoyed here by optimism over U.S.-China and also this this currency manipulator angle. But suffice it to say that we're about ready to switch to a completely different set of inputs, and that'll be the earnings. And there's some investors that are concerned that earnings may not be strong enough to support these higher valuations, and particularly in emerging markets. What's your view?
Well, it really depends on which market's talking about, because the subset is quite large. If you look at, in general, some of the emerging Asian markets like India, which have run up a lot, but valuations are still quite expensive, despite GDP growth not being great over the last couple of quarters, there could be some disappointments. But if you look at some of the other smaller emerging markets or frontier markets in Asia, in fact, some markets like Pakistan or Sri Lanka, in fact, are bottoming. They're seeing their economies, in fact, bottom now. Earnings growth should actually improve over the next couple of quarters. And, you know, markets like Vietnam still are showing about 7% GDP growth, so you're looking at earnings growth of about 12-13% this year as well. So overall, some markets will have good earnings growth, some may not, like and which could disappoint some investors.
And obviously the strength in the yuan is obviously going to be a move for some of these EMs as well. What specific kind of moves do you see apart from, say, the likes of CNY denominated debt?
Well, if you talk about currency, I mean, if you look at most of the currencies in emerging Asia in 2018, they depreciated significantly. And many of the countries have, in fact, worked on improving their current accounts over the last 18 odd months. So, in fact, you would see, you know, despite issues with oil price or CNY, et cetera, you will see some currency stability, I would say, in most of the markets because, you know, you don't have expanding current account deficits. Many countries have cut down on imports. So from a currency perspective, I think the markets in the region should be quite okay.
Are you at all concerned that the optimism will fade a little bit on U.S.-China once they start talking about phase two?
Yes, absolutely. And that's the concern, especially at this point in time, because phase one, once it gets signed, there's some excitement over that. But with respect to execution of phase one, future talks about some tricky issues between China and U.S., that will continue. So it's not that, you know, everything's going to be calm after phase one and things are back on track between U.S. and China. That's not going to happen. So I think people keep watching the developments and see how that goes.
Sorry, go ahead, Juliet.
I was just going to say phase one took so long, you know, it's hard to even kind of put a timeline or expectation on what phase two would look like and how long that is going to take. Do you even sort of see it kind of happening?
Yeah, absolutely. I think phase one has to be signed first. You know, the issues over there have to be executed on, and then phase two happens. But I think what Donald Trump wants, at least phase one is being signed before the presidential election, so at least he has a win over there. And then phase two, we'll see how that goes. I think that's the thought process at this point in time.
Ruchir, you know, for emerging markets and frontier markets, do you want to go with some of the tech players that are there and are doing well, or do you want to go for some more of the value names that maybe didn't perform very well over the past year, largely because of the overhang of the trade war?
Well, if you look at frontier markets in general, 2019 was quite a tough year, especially for Asian frontier markets. You know, you had sentiment weak across most Asian frontier markets last year because of domestic issues in some markets like Bangladesh, Pakistan, Sri Lanka, and Mongolia. But I think many of these concerns are kind of subsiding now and things are recovering. So valuation is extremely cheap. So I would go with some of these names. And with respect to tech, I mean, there are not many tech names in these markets. I mean, you have Alipay going into some markets like Pakistan and Bangladesh and Vietnam. But from a listed equity perspective, there are not many ways to play tech in these markets. So I would go for the old economy stocks, which is, you know, consumption-based, because the demographics in Asian frontier markets are very attractive. So I would go for some of the consumer names in these markets.
And speaking of consumer names, one country, I should say, that you like is Vietnam, and it looks like we're seeing some benefits there from the trade war with South Korean companies moving some of their production to Vietnam as well.
Right. I mean, Vietnam has been benefiting from this trend over the last few years, not just once the trade war started, not just because the trade war started. So you had South Korean companies like LG and Samsung move production over there. You also have some Apple suppliers move production to Vietnam in the last 12 months or so. And in fact, if you look at most of the Hong Kong textile companies, if you speak to any of them, most of them have moved a large part of the production from China into Vietnam and other low-cost destinations like Cambodia and Bangladesh. From a consumer perspective, of course, that's helping income levels, helping job creation. But overall itself, you know, income levels are rising from a low base. So I think we like the modern retail penetration in Vietnam. We also like the auto sector. These are two sectors we like in Vietnam, and we own, you know, the largest mall operator in Vietnam as well as the largest automotive holding company in Vietnam as well.
And what about credit?
Credit with respect to loan growth in Vietnam, I think that's kind of eased off for the last couple of years. I mean, it was almost 20% in 2016, but the central bank has been a bit touchy about, you know, having another crisis in terms of credit. So they've kind of slowed down credit growth over the last couple of years, especially the real estate sector. It's about 13 to 14%.
Let's talk about some of the specific stocks that you're looking at, because you mentioned some of the markets you're interested in, but it still looks like you're looking at sort of some of these pharma stocks and also perhaps industrials. I see Lucky Cement in Pakistan.
Right. So Bangladesh, you know, it's a very attractive consumer story. I think, you know, it's 165 million people. It's a median age of 22. Income levels are $1,500 annually per capita on a per capita basis. So it's growing from a low base. And they have a rising middle class as well in Bangladesh. And, you know, per capita consumption of, you know, pharmaceutical products in Bangladesh is extremely low. It's half of what India consumes on an annual basis. And it's three times less than what Vietnam consumes. So you have a large amount of penetration which can be carried out in the market. And also consumer appliances in Bangladesh, extremely low. You know, penetration levels are less than 10% for white goods like air conditioners or washing machines and televisions. So significantly lower than other parts of Asia. As income levels rise, you know, that will improve. And also in Pakistan, I think in general the market has been so weak over the last 2 years because of the political issues and the macro issues. But things are turning around after the IMF has come in. And, you know, cyclical stocks, because the margins have collapsed over the last couple of years, they've bottomed out now and valuations are very attractive. So that's why we like cement. Once, you know, earnings recover and GDP recovers, cement stocks should do well as well.
So I guess over the past many years, really since the financial crisis, investors globally have been underinvested in emerging markets. That may be switching now. Is there some competition then? I mean, are those flows going to go into emerging markets and maybe not frontier markets?
Well, actually, if you look at the valuation gap between developed markets and frontier markets, for example, take the S&P 500. The S&P 500 trades at about 22 times right now, and the MSCI Frontier Market Index trades at about 10 times. And this valuation gap, I think, is the highest it has been over the past decade. So, in fact, if you look at flows over the next year or so, you know, investors who want to stay away from some of the larger, more expensive markets like the U.S. and feel there's growth which is strong in some of the frontier markets, they would in fact allocate more to frontier markets over the next couple of years, because the last year has been so tough, everyone's gone towards the U.S. But now the valuation gap has become so high, I think they'll move towards frontier markets.